your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDO Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me in studio, back by popular demand, is my good buddy, Kevin Woodley. Kevin, what's going on?
Can you be back by popular demand when it's your first, like, it's sort of, like, I guess it's new is old again, so technically we've done this before, but this is kind of different. Like, got your own gig, your own digs now. It's nice.
Yeah, we've got a professional studio here. We've got a producer behind the glass. Producer
got Dom. Your own Dom.
Yeah, doing great things. Podcast sounds better than ever. And unfortunately, we also do have time constraints today. I was looking back at it. I was telling you, when we get going, our previous episodes have been like 90 minutes, 100 minutes. We just go all day.
Well, and that's what, like, you asked me three questions to get the 90 minutes?
Yeah. Well, sometimes not even that. Sometimes I start a question and then we go on a digression and it works out that way.
So we'll keep it tight today.
Okay. So I don't really have any necessarily specific topics. I kind of just wanted to bounce around some ideas with you. You know, most teams have played around 10 games or so. So I don't think there's any necessarily concrete takeaways to take away, especially from individual goalie stats so far. Like, maybe we've seen some trends, or especially with some of these goalies we were curious about that switch teams, how they look in their new surroundings. But I don't necessarily want to be just pulling up their goal save above expected and saying, proclaiming that that was a good signing or a good trade or this guy's in trouble. So I thought we could kind of bounce around some bigger picture topics and see where that takes us today.
20 games. And I learned that one from Mike McKenna, who I know is a guest on various shows here.
Maybe even 25.
Yeah, he's always said 20, so that's the minimum for me before you start to really judge a goalie by his numbers. And we've seen it, at this point with this small a sample, like, all it takes is one stinker or one. It doesn't have to be a stinker. It could be a night where, like, your team gives up a low number of shots, but half of them are high danger and you're dead. So it takes a while to dig out of that. So I'm with you. There are some trends, however, that we can pay a little attention to. We're going to give a little back pat to Woodley for the Logan Thompson. Vegas will be just fine because his underlying numbers last year were right where they are this year.
Yeah.
So this is not out of nowhere, and he may have been the old dark horse Vezina pick. So a little early yet for that, but I'm feeling pretty good about that one.
Well, I just did a Vegas Golden Knights deep dive yesterday with Jesse Granger, who covers the team really well, and he brought up a great point about how Bruce Cassidy came in and totally changed their defensive system from under Pete DeBoer, where all of a sudden now they're less so pursuing the puck all around a defensive zone and more so allowing teams to take shots from distance, but controlling where those shots are coming from. And you look at their heat map of where they're giving shots out last year around the net, it was just peppered with red. They were just giving up a high volume, high frequency of grade A looks from that inner slot area around the net. And this year they're giving up shots from the outside, but it's very contained. And that must be like a goalie's dream to know where those shots are coming from.
As opposed to Pete DeBoer's system in Vegas, which was a goalie nightmare. Like, they leaned heavily on goaltending. Robin Lehner, Marc-Andre Fleury was fully deserving of the Vezina. He was the best goalie in the league, and he had to be because, again, they leaned on him so heavily that season. And that, again, what I like about Thompson so far is that he showed he could handle that last year. And now in a more controlled environment, he's making the easy stuff look easy. But when it does break down, and it's not always pretty, like, you watch Logan Thompson as a goalie, like somebody who sort of tries to study goaltending, and there's moments where you're like, hey, but he just battles, right? And he's, so far he's getting away with it at times, but there's an art to that too, right? And so, again, the numbers in both systems are in a really nice spot. And it's not, to me, out of nowhere that he has, you know, the ability to do this. The challenge, and we're seeing it here in Vancouver with Thatcher Demko, is over time, can you keep it up?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Demko now? Because he was on my list here, in my catalog of things I wanted to discuss.
Do we have to?
I mean, I think we should, because some of the dialogue I've seen around his performance so far, I find to be so misguided.
So two things can be true. He set an incredibly high standard last year. He was top five in the league in all the adjusted numbers I have access to. And, you know, I know buddies on my beer league team assume that every time I say this, I get money or something because I say it so often. But all the stats
are great. You're on Thatcher's payroll?
ClearSight Analytics. Every time I say it, they're like, they say a little ding should go off because I throw that around so much. But, hey, they give me access under the hood, and it's one of the, to me, the best sort of places to measure shot quality. And so when you adjusted Demko's numbers last year for shot quality, he finished seventh, but a lot of that, he dropped out of the top four only because he tried to play through the injury the last four games. It really submarined his numbers. And I think that's something that we have to consider, the fact that he required a surgery in the offseason, and his offseason didn't look like it normally does. Has that slowed the start? But at the end of the day, So he's not living up to that high standard he set.
Yep.
Adjusted numbers are below expected. You know, he's in the bottom third of the league, near the bottom in goals saved above expected. That's, again, that's a rough start and how many times he's been out there. But the environment's just a nightmare right now. Like, the numbers that are killing him are, you know, he's given up 32 goals this year, okay? 10 of them are on slot line plays. So the what we think of as the backdoor, the cross ice one-timers and the backdoor tap-ins. 11 of them are on broken plays. And a lot of those went across the slot line, hit something on their way. I saw some people critical of the rebound goal the other night against the goal number two, where the blown coverage on the backdoor, but they felt the rebound should have been controlled off the right pad. I would say the same thing if he had clear sight on the puck and if it wasn't deflected on the way in. And the numbers say both of those things happen. So that goes from a puck, a shot you should control, to one you're just trying to make sure you get a piece of, and everybody else has to do their job, and nobody did, and it's another backdoor tap in. So 32 goals, 10 on cross ice, 11 on broken plays, and 3 on breakaways.
Yeah.
Like that, there have been a couple of uncharacteristic, you know, low percentage goals at this point in the season, but the majority.
Very few, though.
Just a couple, the one in the Carlson one, a little outside of the RVH zone. Even they stay in reverse VH here at post play longer and higher in the zone than most, but that one's still outside and he doesn't get up, and so he gets sniped.
Yep.
You know, on a play that's not a sharp angle play using a sharp angle save selection. The tying goal in Minnesota, Kaprizov comes down the wing. He hits a spot again. Demko goes into his post, expecting him to continue down the wing into a sharp angle.
Oh, it was a pass down to Zuccarello for the tip over his shoulder?
No, that was the one right before that. So Kaprizov down the wing, he passes it to the middle, and Demko's actually moving into his post on the right, so he's late getting back to the middle. And then the last one is the Zuccarello one. And to me, that's the perfect example, and I've used it a few times, so apologies to 650 listeners who heard this before. But it's just the way it goes sometimes. Like, every decision you make, it feels like the wrong one. So he goes in early into the post on the second goal I just talked about off the rush. And then on the next play, on a power play, it goes down low to Zuccarello, and there's a slight hesitation. Like, normally he'd be slammed into that post so hard he almost knocks it off, sealed tight, short side. But he just got beat going in early. So what does he do? He hesitates a little bit, and Zuccarello makes a hell of a play. And still, that's one where I would expect him to have that sealed up. But because of that hesitation, oh, crap, I just went too early. I better not get caught moving.
Yep.
He got caught going in late. And that's the way it sometimes snowballs. Listen, I watched him in August because people have asked about the injury. Does he look slower? Does he look this? In August, I was doing video when he was working with Ian Clark out at 8 Rinks. And I put a little bit of on social media, keep the, you know, he had some new gear at one point, keep the goalie geeks happy, right? I literally had NHL goalies like texting me like, oh my God, his movement looks so good. It's so crisp. It's so clean. It's so powerful, right? The other night, Mackenzie Blackwood, after we finished the post-game interviews, and Blackwood's got like a career 962 against the Canucks, he comes up to me after, he goes, wait, which is a sec, because I was leaving to go get Lindy Ruff. And he's like, man, Demko's post play, it's just so good, right? Like, and he's asking me for, like, you know, how the focal points and what are some of the things he does. And I'm like, yeah, it's been a bit of a rough start. And he just goes, nah, it's not him. Like, there's a guy who's taking care of his own stuff at the other night. And on a night where Demko gets backdoored twice and 2 2-on-1s, like, other people can see that this is a product of the system as much as it is Thatcher struggling. And yet, at the end of the day, whatever, 8 starts in, the numbers aren't what we expect, either raw or adjusted, and the criticism will follow.
Well, I went back and I watched all those goals back just to make my own tally. I've got it at 12 goals out of the 32 that went across the seam.
So probably a couple of those got qualified. They probably hit something, so they get qualified as broken plays. That's where the discrepancy there.
7 either tips or rebounds. Now, as you said, maybe a couple of those rebounds he could have corralled or helped out his defenseman. At the same time, I would argue if the people in front of him were doing their job, maybe the other team wouldn't have been able to just tap it in right away as well.
Be nice to have somebody anywhere near the other person tapping it in every once in a while.
Yeah. 9. I classified 9 of them as all alone in front. So that 3 of those were breakaways. A couple of them were all of a sudden the puck just came out front and someone was just wide open uncovered.
Like partially. And those get, there's like 5 different types of breakaways in clear sight. So there's the 3 that I reference are just the clear cut breakaways.
Yeah.
But you're right. There's some where it's like bang, bang. They call them partials or down low breakaways, things like that. Like, it's basically mano a mano with a shooter who, and half the time, like you said, you never expect that puck to end up on that guy's stick. And that's just the way it's going right now.
Yeah. So honestly, I came down to four of them out of the 32 where I was like, all right, I think he should have stopped this one. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up to you, I'm very curious about the way we process goals against, where I think we all have this subjective definition in our minds of, all right, that's a stop, that's a shot the goalie should have, right? And we just expect goalies to save every single one of those, versus the ones where either it's a breakaway or they're having to move laterally, where, all right, it'd be nice if they stopped this one, yeah, but I'm not necessarily expecting him to.
Right, should have or could have, right? Like, I think Mitch Korn used to qualify it like as no chance, should have stopped, could have stopped. Like, there's sort of like three different classifications. And I think part of the problem is, and listen, hey, like, your goalie's got to stop the odd two-on-one. Yeah. Right? Like, that's part of the gig, right? You don't want to see as many as they're seeing. And I always remember a conversation with Robin Lehner about going from Buffalo to the island and how things really changed. And that's why I look a lot at rush chances, mm-hmm. especially odd man rush. Like,
right.
That's how you score. Like, Lehner put it to me this way. When I was in Buffalo, we'd have four or five a game. I don't know if that was an exaggeration, but that's how he felt like. When he gets to the island, he gets one every two games.
Yeah.
And he's like, even if I am playing the best that I can, I am on top of my game. If I see 4 2-on-1s in a game, there's a good chance at least one of those is going in. But now if I'm seeing 4 2-on-1s, it's like 7 or 8 games and one of those goes in.
Yeah.
Like, nobody notices, right? Right. So, and I think to me, so you're right. And I think the thing I dig down a little deeper on is, how are these odd man rushes going in?
Mm.
And the one thing I would say is, like, that pass is getting through all the time. We see that you have your numbers. I'm looking at the stats. Like, yeah. That slot line pass is getting across every time. And like, it's not rocket science. Like, we're not speaking out of turn. It's not like the Canucks have all of a sudden reinvented the wheel and said, hey, on 2-on-1s now, we're not going to give up the pass.
Yeah.
Or we are going to give up the pass. Like, they're trying. Like, the
I don't know.
Goalie's supposed
watching
to take
Tyler
the shooter.
Myers play, it seems like that is the game plan.
So they're giving it up a lot. And so, listen, somebody said, is Demko cheating because it's so bad in front of him? I said, well, actually, I think he might have to start cheating. Yeah. And you never want to say that.
Right.
But if he's playing the shooter and he's out past the blue ice and that pass gets through, like, every foot I take, if a guy coming down the right, every foot outside of my crease on a guy coming down to my right, that pass gets across to my left. That's another 2 feet I have to cover to get back into position. And so it's happened so often where he's just not getting there. And there's been times he actually gets there and gets a piece of it. And he's just, again, this is when the snowball goes downhill. You get a piece of it and goes in. I look at the McCann shot. Like, I still don't know. Like, that's a hell of a shooter on a breakaway that should never happen, frankly, yeah. The way that breakout was. He gets a major piece of it with his glove, and somehow it goes in outside his pad on the blocker side. Like, those are just the way it's bouncing for him right now. But on the 2-on-1s, if that, like, you don't want to be like, oh, man, my guys are going to let the pass through. I'm going to have to start playing deeper. Because then you're going to get beat. Some guy's going to see you backed up into your crease and just snipe you short side.
Yep.
But if that pass keeps getting through like that, maybe he needs to take less ice. And again, that would be cheating. I don't see him cheating yet.
Yeah.
But if they keep defending like this, he's going to have to.
Well, I was watching the TNT broadcast yesterday, and Henrik Lundqvist was on the intermission panel, and I thought it was a really actually thoughtful and interesting conversation that they had, which is a rare thing to say about a hockey broadcast. But he was...
All you got to do is have a goalie on.
Yeah.
All you got to do is have a goalie on. I'm going to plug the In Goal Radio podcast. We spent an hour with Henrik Lundqvist,
yeah.
And that dude is
was
so
he, was
good.
He wearing a three-piece suit?
He called in.
He probably was.
I think he called in because he knew, like if he had actually done the video chat with us... Like, I think he knew that I had, like, four of my, like, beer league teammates' wives that had, like, lined up to get a copy of the video, right? So, he probably was, guaranteed, yeah.
So, it felt like when he was speaking about it, I mean, he's clearly speaking from firsthand experience throughout having played for so long at such a high level, but he made this point about how, he's like, I wonder if the defensemen are either aware of the analytics here or are being told them, because if they were aware of them... How can you play it this way, acknowledging that if you're the goalie, I think every goalie that's made it to the NHL, probably even ones that are not that good and are playing beer league or lower levels, they probably feel like if I can set my feet and I can see the shot, I have a chance to save it, right?
Yep.
So as a defenseman playing on the 2-on-1, knowing that, all of a sudden, I think it makes the calculus for you pretty simple where it's, all right, I need to, under any means necessary, stop the pass from going through, let my goalie do his job.
Well, and that's why I was joking about, like, it's not like the Canucks have changed the system.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't talked to anyone like, hey, are you guys suddenly letting the pass through on purpose? It just kind of looks like that, right? Like, I'll go you one further. We do pro reads at In Goal, where we sit down and break down saves with goalies, and they walk us through their reads and their tape. And I had a really good with Braden Holtby. We sat down for like 45 minutes and just went over video in person last year. And one of the things he talked about, like, he's like, if we're going to give up the pass, I want us to give it up in tight, in close. I don't want us to give it up high in the zone, because when I'm high in the zone, and listen, goalies play odd man rushes with varying degrees of backwards flow. In other words, some guys come way out and drift quickly. Some guys will start at the edge of their crease and just barely drift. Everybody sort of has different personal preferences. We're seeing Demko right now outside of his crease, maybe a little more than I remember, and that's what's sort of exacerbated the pass getting across high in the zone. But in Holtby's mind, he's like, I don't want it getting across high because that guy can catch it. Now he's got options,
yep,
and he's got time. If you force him down low, even if you let this guy come in and he gets like close to my crease, like below the bottom of the circles before he makes that pass, yeah, it's tight and it's quick because the pass doesn't go as far. But that guy who gets it on the other side, like if I get a pad across and I've got a glove over top of it and just built a little vertical coverage, like that's a really tough play for him to make. Yeah. And so it's not just that the Canucks are giving up the pass, but they're giving it up in a spot in the zone where the guy catching it has options.
Yeah.
And right now, he also has enough time and space that like there's been one, I think Olofsson beat him along the ice where I was surprised. That's pretty rare where a guy can shoot it inside the post and you don't get something there. But for the most part, these guys are teeing it up and getting a lot on it and getting it up.
Well, on that same broadcast, the same conversation, Anson Carter referenced that Steven Valiquette had passed him along. Now, he didn't reference what the time frame was for this stat, but he said that out of whatever, however many two-on-ones that happened at the NHL, 25% of them resulted in goals. Which to me seems like a strikingly high number if the defensemen were doing their jobs and allowing the goalie to face the shot as opposed to dealing with a cross-ice pass.
Well, so I wonder, and I know he has it,
yeah,
and I don't know that I have the ability to, maybe we'll, coming out of a commercial break here, I'll see if I can dig it up because right. I got the raw machine turning in front of me here, but I'm not sure I know how to sort for that, to be perfectly honest. I'm not that bright. But I think I'd be curious to see out of that 25%, how much, like where the conversion rate is on guys just coming in and shooting and guys completing that pass. I mean, I know I always go back to the Capitals Cup win against Vegas. And like there's one where the Capitals and how they attacked was influenced by sort of turning that over to the goalie coach, Scott Murray, and using access to clear sight to sort of look at how do you score in the NHL?
Mm.
And making sure that they were emphasizing getting that pass across. And I remember watching in the Cup final, and it stood out more because Fleury was so aggressive.
Right.
And so there were times where knowing the game plan, like I knew what the sort of ideal was that they were trying to achieve offensively. They get these odd man rushes. And even I'm looking at my TV watching Ovechkin come down the wing. I'm like, shoot that. But he's passing it. Right now, listen, it helps when it's Ovechkin either making the pass or receiving the, like, skill to execute on a two-on-one makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I'm coming down in a two-on-one and somebody makes the pass to me and I try a one-timer, good chance I miss the puck and end up face first. That's why I'm a goalie. But when you've got that type of skill, that's what they did. Like to the point where they were passing out of what looked like great shooting situations on odd man rushes, and they were still making the pass because they knew if they tried it four times and three got through, they were still going to score more than if they shot from glorious spots four times. Like it's the math just adds up. And so it became an ideal for them. And it was something that I think against Fleury for sure, they exploited. As a matter of fact, I know they were told not to say anything.
Yeah.
Because they've like, listen, if Marc-Andre doesn't make an adjustment here, we're just going to keep pumping them. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, we talked last time we did a podcast together. We were talking however many years later in last year's first round series against a team like the Blues, who was exclusively looking for these cross ice passes before they shot any time in the offensive zone. It was a nightmare matchup for Fleury because of how aggressively he was coming out and challenging the initial shooter. And so I'm that's something that I keep trying to think about and keep trying to incorporate more into the way I'm watching these games and the way I'm analyzing them, that shot selection component of this, right? Because I think so often we think about it in such binary terms of all right, the player got the puck in a certain area of the ice. Are they looking to pass or shoot? And clearly you're not, with the speed of the game, you're not thinking, okay, this percentage of the time, if I do this, this will work or not, regardless of how much you've pre-scouted and watched the other team and everything. But when we're thinking about all these expected goals models or something, right, that's something that I think is kind of a next frontier for us to break down. All right, a guy gets the puck in the slot. If he puts it on net, that is assigned an expected goal value, right, depending on, and then whether it went in or not. But if he had a guy across the ice that he could have passed it to for an even better look, what was the kind of like the added win probability of the decision he sort of made there, right?
And I think you have to have that in mind, not just from an audience watching it, but like a coaching staff. Because there are those, like I said, even when I was yelling at the TV that year, like shoot that, right? Yeah. Like, so you know damn well, if you pass out of one of those and it doesn't get completed and you don't create anything out of it, you don't get a goal, you don't even get a chance on net, you know that you're getting it at the bench. Why don't you shoot that? You're in a glory, like everybody's screaming, shoot, 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 right? Like, and so I think that understanding has to go, you know, beyond just us. Like that has to be understood on the bench as well and on the coaches. And if everybody understands it, like, hey, if I get that pass through, that's, you know, Jesper Bratt.
Yes.
And the power play the other day, you know, shooting from the top of the circle. Demko got there, he's set.
Yeah,
he's a hell of a player with a pretty good lane, and he makes a backdoor pass, and it's a tap in to Heischer. If he shoots that, it's still a pretty good chance, right? What if somebody got a stick on that pass? I know it's the Canucks penalty kill, so chances are it wasn't going to happen. But what if somebody gets a stick on that pass? Is anybody yelling at Jesper Bratt that he should have shot that? Right. So it's you're right. It's understanding how goals are scored in the National Hockey League, and I think we've at least graduated past the. With the exception of a few teams and philosophies, we graduated past throw it on the net and crash the net and good things will happen. There are areas of the ice where you can, especially on specific goaltenders, you can funnel things to the net. And if you have bodies there, you are going to create scrambles and traffic. But as a general philosophy, understanding that offense is created by making goalies move east-west and getting rid of the puck quickly. Like, you can't dust it off. Goalies, yeah, we got to make them move, but they're too damn good. If you catch it, dust it off, and then shoot, you're probably shooting into their logo. It's got to be 1T.
Well, that's what I was thinking about exactly, because I think it used to be so basic the way we'd consider that equation, right? It would be like, all right, let's say you average 30 shots a game as a team. Score on average 10% of the time, getting three goals, that's good, right? But that's not necessarily how it works, right? Like, if 27 of those 30 shots are unimpeded kind of point shots where you're not getting any of that lateral action,
coughs,
we shouldn't expect
Carolina
10%
Hurricanes
of, we
like
shouldn't
5
expect
years
10%
ago,
of those
yeah,
to go
no,
in,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Like, I love that. It used to be the conversation with the Hurricanes goalies is like, they would dominate the possession numbers before we sort of started to round them out a little bit, you know, and add some of this contact for the expected goals models. And the goalies would just be like, man, like, I watch us play and like all we do is warm the other goalie up. It's what I call 99%ers. Yeah. Like the ones that the guy, like if you have traffic and you funnel pucks from certain areas, you can create chaos. Absolutely. But if you're just throwing it on the net along the ice without any purpose and without those bodies, like, goalies in the NHL steer that in anytime they want, that along the ice is off the stick and into the glass or over the glass and control it with the face. It's just a turnover. That's how I know the Capitals look at it. Like, I've sat next to their goalie coach and watched a game. He just came and sat down in the press box, and like, they're taking shots. He's like, oh, it's a turnover. Like, we're basically just giving the other team the puck or having a face off and resetting. Sometimes you want a face off, but they're looking for quality. And I think more and more teams, and I think we've seen that early this season, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but talking to people, they feel like less teams are settling for that stuff from the outside, the ones you talk about that really don't do anything, and they're looking to create quality. And it's, in some cases, it's messed with goalies' numbers. Like, they don't have those easy ones help you feel your way into a game, those 99%ers, but they also pad the stats a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And without them, you know, if half the stuff you're facing, I look back at the Canucks Oilers first game of the season for both teams, and the Oilers, because it was held up in this market as a victory in terms of how they played and what they limited. But I think the Oilers had like 18 chances or 18 shots. 9 were high danger. Like, as a goalie, that's nightmare fuel.
Right.
Like, that's just there's none of the easy stuff to ape. Like I said, pad your stats, absolutely. Like Christian Laettner missing the putback so he could grab another rebound. You know, like it pads your stats, but also gets you feeling good about the game. You don't get any of that feel. It's tough.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, I have another thought on this, but we have to take a break here. And then when we come back, we're going to keep talking about goalies and everything with you. You're listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're back here on the Hockey PDOcast talking all things goalies with Kevin Woodley. Kevin, before we went on break, we were kind of getting into the big picture topic of kind of game theory, shot selection, optimizing your looks in the offensive zone. And the point I wanted to make before we move off of this was, you know, you were saying how certain teams deem a point shot as essentially a turnover because it has such a low percentage chance of going in. I was looking at this because I was noting yesterday how the Golden Knights have shifted their offensive philosophy to redistribute their shots more from their defensemen, where last year it was like all Pietrangelo, Hague, and Theodore firing away, to now their forwards are kind of carrying a larger load. 2% of all shots by defensemen went into 5-on-5 last year. Now, that doesn't count the ones that might have, you know, wound up being tips or whatever. But, I mean, when you think about it that way, it's such an astronomically low percentage of them that it almost really is. And I do wonder if we're going to reach a point in time where a team just tries to, almost like a baseball perspective, you know, how we've seen probabilistic thinking result in, all right, you move your infield defense over when a certain hitter comes up because they're more likely to hit it over here. Where we see teams just go so aggressively in this regard and say, no point shots. If you get it at the point as a defenseman and you're getting pressured and you don't have time to do something with it, just dump it back down along the boards and let your forwards try to win a battle and then do something themselves because we don't want to turn it over at the blue line.
So there's a couple things there that we can measure that, you know, I think will maybe prevent us from ever getting to that point.
Okay.
Completely, at least. And one is broken plays. So, I mean, if it's a like clear-sighted, the goalie can see it and you're shooting from the blue line, like there's times where you see those and you're like, I'm like, I could stop that. And again, everybody in my beer league team's like, no, he couldn't. But, you know, that's how low percentage it is. But if you've got, like, you know, we have the numbers on what it looks like if you've got layered screens or like not just one person in front of the goalie, but several layers. We know that pucks that hit bodies on their way to the net create broken plays. Like, are they predictable? No, but creating that chaos leads to goals. And so there's value there. But I'm with you for sure in terms of not trying to force it. Taking it if you don't have those types of bodies and those types of players. And also the value in just like, hey, like you can create that chaos. As a matter of fact, there's a better way to create it out of the corner from below the goal line where a goalie's got to turn his head or be stuck on his goal line is probably a better way to create those broken plays and chaos by making lateral plays into that traffic versus from the point. So we are seeing that shift, but I think as long as you still create goals with broken plays and pucks off bodies, and because as a goalie, that's the nightmare fuel, right? Like if I see it, and it hits me, even if I give up a rebound, if it hits me, I know or have a good idea where it's headed because I felt it. Even if I didn't see it coming through traffic, I got a better idea. If it hits that guy standing in front of me and I've lost sight of it as it hits him, I didn't feel the puck. I didn't feel it off my left pad. I didn't see it off my left pad. So I don't know that I have to recover to my left next. I've got to find it. And so that desire to create chaos and the fact that, you know, for all the talk about lateral plays and slot lines and all the great ways to create offense, chaos is still one of them, and broken plays measures as one of the highest types of scoring chances we have, means that you'll still see teams rely on, hopefully less, but rely on trying to create some of that.
Yeah.
For sure, unscreened, like just at the goalie, like you said, turnover every time.
Yeah, especially, you know, in the playoffs, we'll see time and time again with how the game bogs down and stuff like that. It feels like teams are incentivized to almost just throw the puck into a crowd and hope something good happens. But I don't know. I just find it to be such an unsatisfying offensive approach.
You said 2%. I got clear sight outside. Anything that the goalie has clear vision on clear sight outside of the slot area. So it doesn't have to be the point. Like anything around the perimeter is 1.4% this year.
Well, this was 2% for a defenseman, which could be like a breakaway for Roman Josi or something, right? It's not like just purely a defenseman should never be shooting the puck is what I'm trying to say.
Well, clear sight, and that's outside the slot area, clear sight perimeter. So like way out there, like 0.4%.
Yeah.
Like literally a turn. I call them 99 percenters, right? I should be calling them 99.6 percenters.
Well, it's, and that's such a remarkably low number. Like, if you think about the volume you have to reach just to get one goal.
Well, I used to use the 99% because I like 99 out of 100 a goalie stops it. But then I started saying, like, it's actually not true. It's probably more like 499 out of 500, yeah. Right? Like, they just don't make those mistakes.
Oh, man. All right. What else do you want to talk about while we're here? I mean, we can talk about the Blues a little bit because, you know, they've gotten off to a rough start and their GM came out. And I thought an interesting point that he made there was a question about, you know, the goals they were giving up, how much of it you lay blame on the goalies. And he pointed out how much backdoor action they were giving up. So I went back, similar to what I did with Demko, and watched them back. And in one of the most recent games against the Kings in particular, I believe all five goals they gave up were not only cross-seam, but they were like backdoor tap-ins where I guess the only way it could have been prevented was if Jordan Binnington blocked the initial pass. Because as soon as it got by him, like, it was in the net. There's nothing you could do. Like, it wasn't even a matter of you know, anticipation or lateral movement, because the puck was literally behind him after the pass because he was out to get the shooter. So
they started clean and his numbers were off the charts, but it's gotten really ugly there. And I've been saying this sort of ever since they won the cup, like, the narrative sort of surrounded them that they were a good defensive team, and they really haven't been since that year. And Binnington's numbers have suffered because of it. And obviously he lost the job to Husso last year, but I think we saw in the playoffs, as they sort of buckled down defensively and gave him some structure he could trust last year before he got hurt, he was pretty good. Like, people used to sort of yell at me when I say, like he would have been the guy, you know, with no Carey Price and you know, Carter Hart last year wasn't having the season he's having. Like Binnington would have been the guy for me if there was an Olympics for Team Canada. I don't know what kind of uproar that would have created because of the act that comes with it sometimes that people don't appreciate.
Yeah.
But the reality is his adjusted stuff's been pretty good. He's always had a really low expected save percentage in St. Louis. It's down there near the bottom, much like we talked about Demko here. Down near the bottom of the league again right now. And like I said, and again, like, I don't even think that can, in this small a sample, like, it's not even enough, right? Like, we're just talking about Demko. Like, yeah, he's got one of the lowest expected save percentage in the league, but he's playing below that. Even with all the context we add here, it's still not enough for, like, backdoor tap in, like, 100%. It still gets measured as, like, a 60% scoring chance, not 100%. Right. You and I can see it.
Yeah.
Those are 100%ers. They're going in every time unless the guy totally whiffs on it, right? But they don't, that's not how they're measured in terms of creating these models.
Yeah. All right. Here's a fun exercise for us. Let's say you and I were given the car keys to a team. We're building it from scratch. I don't want to go with particular names because it's very easy. We go, all right, yeah, let's just take Andrei Vasilevsky or Igor Shesterkin and figure it out after that. But I remember last time we were speaking about giving actual thought to how you construct either your defense out from the net in terms of, all right, you have a goalie, they have particular strengths and weaknesses. Now, how do we make them look good by, you know, not giving up shots where they struggle to face those, whether it's off the rush, whether it's cross ice with movement, whatever it be, maybe. And then how teams don't typically do that, right? Like, you generally have a defense and then you just bring in a goalie and you're just like, all right, make it work. Stop the puck.
Yeah. I mean, goalies have strengths and weaknesses. So bringing in goalies that suit the types of chances your team give up makes a lot of sense. The golf analogy is courses for horses, right? There's always certain courses that fit certain golfers' eyes. And every time they go there on the PGA Tour, you know they're going to tear it up because it just works for their game. Whether they hit a draw and everything is right to left, like, it's that type of mentality. Why wouldn't you pick a system that fits your goaltender? Or if you've already got the system and the coaching staff in place, pick a goaltender that would succeed
that
in
fits
that.
In that system.
And it has happened. I know a team that used these numbers to do that a couple of years ago and had good success with the goaltender. The problem, I think, is quite often the contracts the goaltenders come with exceed the length, the lifespan
of how that's going to be around them. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what the environment's like, whether that's a coaching change or just personnel, like, defense changes in front of them. And all of a sudden you got to adjust the system because their strengths and weaknesses no longer match how you're playing, and there's six of them and one of the goaltender. But, like, in a perfect world, yeah, you'd want to. I use the Luongo example. Luongo and Torts, nightmare fuel. Roberto had size 13 skates. You know, sometimes getting that moving around the ice was like, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, but it was like turning a freighter, right? Like, it was not quick.
Right.
His game was based on, there was a technical element for sure, but his reads were so good. Like, he wanted to see the puck. So now all of a sudden you throw Torts as the coach and they're collapsing in front of him. He can't see the puck. He loves to play at the top of his crease. Can't see the puck. Pucks are hitting bodies, bouncing everywhere. and lateral speed wasn't his strength. So now he's not feeling it. He's not seeing it. It's just ending up over to his left, and he's got to recover. Well, there's a Hall of Fame goaltender, and you're now playing to his biggest weakness, which was lateral speed, right? If he couldn't see and yes. get a read on the play. Like, if he could read it, he'd beat it because of his instincts were so good. But on a pure reaction standpoint, like, that wasn't the strength of his game, and he wasn't comfortable. Like, Eddie Lack was more comfortable playing deep near his goal line. So when that puck hit all those bodies and bounced out, you know, he only had 2 feet to move. Roberto had 6. Like, none of it made any sense. Again, horses for courses. He wasn't a fit there, and you see that happen around the league all the time. Well, drives me nuts.
Here's what hearing you say all that made me think. So much has been made of how you have to be, like, over 6'2 or whatever to be an NHL goalie these days, right? Or whatever the cutoff point is. Like, where the UC Soros is an aberration. You're not seeing a sub-6-foot goalie for the most part. And it starts at the lower levels where typically you need to be a certain...
Oh, you're getting weeded out. So you need
a requirement or you're just not getting promoted to the next level or whatever, or being scouted, right?
That's all that held me back, Dimitri. That and my inability to stop the puck.
With the game not only becoming faster, but becoming so much more rush-based, as we talk about all the time, right? Is it fair to say then that athleticism for goalies should be more in demand than ever because of that lateral mobility?
See, athleticism can be applied in so many ways.
Right.
I think when we think of an athletic goalie, we think of sprawling saves.
Yes.
I think skating.
Okay.
You know, like, we don't think of goalies and skating because goalie skating looks different.
Yeah.
But skating, edge control, the ability to hold edges and be patient, those things become increasingly important. Soros is sort of your, not just from the size standpoint,
from the movement, like,
but the movement, his ability to get there, be square, be on and hold edges and not commit early. Like, it's off the charts. And, you know, I know, like, 6'2", 6'3", I mean, there are teams that will not even look at, let their scouts file a report, on a goalie who's under 6'2". But I mean, the reality is, And I had it was a goalie coach that gave me this analogy, and I'm honestly, I'm struggling to remember whether it was on or off the record, so I won't name him. But he's one of the brighter minds in the game. And he said, listen, like, if there's an ideal, whether that ideal is 6'2 or 6'3, it's in that window. Every 2 or 3 inches on either direction of that window, you have to overcome something.
Yeah, you have to compensate for that.
Yeah. And so if you're 6'5", it's the holes that you open when you move. Or you're probably not going to be as quick on your skates or as mobile in the crease as the guy who's on the other side of that scale at 5'11". And I'm sorry, UC Soros is not 6 feet.
Yeah.
5'11 or 6 feet tall. But what's happened is in the pursuit of the 6'5 and the 6'6 and bigger, the guys that are smaller just don't even get, like, there's no margin for error. Like, if they have a bad season, they're done. Like, there's just... So they just, you know, the guy at 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", is going to get every opportunity to succeed, and the smaller goalies aren't. I think maybe you're starting to see that shift with the success that Soros has had and the way the game is changing. I mean, in a perfect world, goalie coaches are still going to tell you, I think I can make the 6'5" guy move like the 6-footer, and then I win, right? And that's what they're always trying to do. I mean, you look at, again, this is tough because he's not having a great start to his year, and we've talked about the environment. But man, you look at the pace with which Demko moves at 6'4".
Right.
You know, I watched him last year and, like, probably count on one hand the amount of times he was behind the play. Like, just the speed and pace of his game and his ability to connect all those moments and movements seamlessly from, you know, off the rush, down the wing, bang, 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 into the post, across to the other side and up. It's like, it's just lightning. He's almost never behind a play. And so then you kind of go, yeah, okay, if I can get the 6'4" guy who moves like 6 foot, great. But I just think we're throwing too many sort of out with the wash in the smaller range because the ideal still remains large square footage. And you might maybe not see the next UC Soros because he doesn't get as long a look.
Well, if you're scouting a junior age goalie, do you even care if he's actually good at stopping the puck? Or are you watching the physical tools and saying, all right, you know, if you bring this into the right environment, I can mold this and get him in a position where he will stop the puck more often?
That's an interesting. And you know what? I wish I had more conversations with goalie-specific scouts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in general, you'll see goalies, and I think there was a lot of, you know, goalies that had success at World Juniors and Canadian Hockey League that fit this description, say, 10, 15 years ago. that got drafted because they had success and they were technically efficient, especially at the time. And so they, those two things, it's like, okay, that's great. Most of the goalie people I knew at the time were like, I'm looking for raw tools because like, give me an athlete with technical deficiencies I know I can clean up. And it's almost a, I heard this argument around Jesper Wallstad, and I disagree with it personally because I still think there's more to him than that. But the argument at the time was, he's already a finished product. I've got nothing else I can fix. And so they were looking for, you know, a lot of goalie coaches and goalie scouts would be like, give me the raw tools and I can improve the efficiency. I can clean up the skating. I can fix these things. As opposed to the kid that's having success in junior because he already does those things so well. Quite often the scouts look at it and it's like, in the past they didn't, but now it's like, hey, is that a finished product? Like, is there any more upside here? In the past, they'd look at the success and the technique and they'd be like, we want that guy. And then he'd get to the NHL and all of a sudden the environment wasn't as structured. The shooters were better. They couldn't just play on a good team and get away with blocking.
Yeah.
There's no blocking anymore.
Yes.
But there's a whole generation where guys got picked high. And if you really looked at how they played and how they had success to lead to that draft status, you know, it was not easy to predict it wouldn't have worked in the NHL, but you certainly more people should have been asking questions about like, hey, is this going to translate when the environment changes and he's exposed a little more? Does he have those extra layers beyond this good technique that'll allow him to succeed in the National Hockey League?
Yeah. Cause I guess the more I was thinking about it, it's ultimately irrelevant if you can consistently stop WHL shooters as an example, because once you make the NHL, you're not going to be facing those shooters anymore for the most part.
Or if you're on a team that like let's be honest, like there's such a discrepancy for a lot of teams.
Yes.
You know, and again, I don't watch enough CHL now, but back in the day, you'd have these sort of like wagon teams. Yeah. Yeah, that just kind of like, man, like that's where I'd want to look at the shot quality and be like, hey, is this guy really outperforming his environment? Or is he completely a product of the system here? And if so, is it because he has all these great athleticism and instincts and there's still more upside? Or is it because he's just getting into the spot and getting hit by the puck because the guy shooting it has, A, is less skilled than the guy defending him, has no time and space and all those other factors? Like, which one is it? What is allowing him to have that success? Do I think I can get more out of him? Or are we at the peak right now? Will it translate? Can I fix what won't translate? And I just think for a long time, the people that were looking, and I've had some pretty hilarious conversations with goalie staff in the NHL about some of the non-goalie scouting reports that they get over the years. It's gotten better, but like back in the day, like guy'd have a good game. He's like, oh, looks, plays big, looks confident. Guy has a bad game, plays small, doesn't look confident. It's like, okay, why? Why is he having success? Why is he not having success? Where is he on the ice relative to the crease? Is he retreating? Does he play with flow? Does he play inside out, outside in? Like all these factors that you can look at to sort of figure out, is this going to work? Is the stuff that isn't going to work fixable? Is there more upside beyond what I see right now? Those questions just weren't being asked for like generations.
I don't know if it's gotten that much better.
Yeah,
I was watching
some of it's gotten better.
The draft this year, the Avalanche took a goalie in the seventh round. I think it might have been the last pick of the draft. And then the commentary was, this guy is really skinny. I don't know if he'll ever play a heavy game. And it's like, oh, he's a goalie. I don't think it matters.
Hey, we all go to cliches every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. In classic us fashion, I asked you a question 20 minutes ago.
And I answered one.
We did not. Well, no, we didn't answer the question.
Okay, what was the
question? So as a thought exercise, we're building a team. Acknowledging that you're probably not going to have the perfect goalie in Andrei Vasilevskiy, who's a specimen and can basically do anything and would thrive in any environment, I'd say, although he's gotten a pretty good hand dealt
nice
to him
to
as well.
In.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are we sacrificing or what are we prioritizing? You could take it from either direction in terms of either a physical trait or a skill set for a goalie that you feel like, all right, this is something they're going to struggle at, but I feel like we can get an infrastructure around them that'll allow us to minimize that and still allow them to succeed at the NHL level.
The one thing I'm not sacrificing is that skating and that, like, it's the one thing that absolutely has to be there now. Cause I don't care. Like, you know, we did this a different way one year where it was like, you know, if you're building a team, you want three top line centers, four great top four D or one elite goaltender. And if you gave me truth serum, I'd say four top four D and I'll build you a goaltender that can succeed behind it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, Like, I would take the structure and the defensive play ahead of an elite goaltender, and I'd say I can find you, or not, I shouldn't say I would say I can hire goalie coaches that I think can build you a goaltender that would succeed behind yes. that.
Well, you still would say that just because having four good defensemen is such a luxury, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, but I'm still not 100% sure that like everyone would see it that way. So that, and right. the goalie union people wouldn't expect that answer from me. So there's that caveat. But the one thing I am not sacrificing, I would sacrifice size ahead of this, is even if I have as the game becomes so dynamic, even if I have a great defense, I gotta have a goalie that can move. Like I just gotta have a goalie that can move. If you can't skate, you can't play. I hear that all the time around the National Hockey League for goaltenders right now. And I think that's just the one that, you know, I'll take a 6-footer who can skate over a 6'5" that can't.
Yeah.
You know, and like Saros is the perfect example, but that's the one attribute you absolutely have to have. And I would sacrifice others. Not all of them, but I'd sacrifice others as long as my goalie could move and skate.
Do they actually list Saros at 6 foot?
I think they do.
I think the only place it's in his dating profile, he lists that he's 6 foot. Otherwise, I don't. I think he's probably more in the 5'8" range.
Listen. Like, and this is like so common. So I've written stories, obviously, about like the trend towards big, and like, you know, I remember Jonathan Bernier telling me like he watches and cheers for the small goalies. Like, look at the career he's carved out, and his whole career, he was 5'11". He was listed as 5'11". I've covered Joe since his draft. I've been on the ice with him, working with goalie coaches in the off season. Like, his whole life, he was 5'11". He is now listed as 6 feet tall on the NHL website. And I'm like,
he's a late bloomer.
They were just in here. I'm like, hey, did you know you grew an inch? Yeah. Like, this, like, I think it's a default. Like, I don't know if they put him in skates before they measure him. It's just every goalie. It's like, how tall are you? Well, how tall am I really? And then add an inch to an inch and a half.
I love that. That's good stuff, Kevin. All right. That's all the time we have. Unfortunately, oh man, this 50-minute setting.
Did I answer four questions?
This 50-minute setting isn't going to cut it for us, which is why now that we're in the studio, we're going to have you on more often. And not just, I feel like before it was like an annual appearance.
I think we have to check the analytics on car accidents today in the Vancouver area to see if it went up because of people falling asleep at the wheel. But if it didn't, then I'll definitely
come. I don't think so. Everyone always loves it when you come on the PDO cast. Plug some stuff. I'll give you a minute here.
I plug it all the time here at Sportsnet 650, but ingoalmag.com. Just go there. If you're not a goalie, hey, you probably don't care. If you are a goalie, we'll make you a better goalie. Myself is the exception to that rule. We go on the ice, drills, tips, mindset drills, mindset tips, pro reads, where I talked about where we literally will sit down and watch a video with an NHL goalie, and they will explain to us what they're looking for in a play. Handedness, how the player's sort of holding the puck, like little things that it blows me away. We did our first one with Carey Price, and I've covered the league 20 years, and Carey was sort of my guinea pig. We had a day in the offseason with him. I'm like, Carey, like, I've had this theory. Let's do this thing called pro reads. I've had it for a few years. Yeah, I want you to try it for me. And after 20 years in the league, I thought I knew what goalies were processing the information, and he blew my mind. Like, the amount of detail that he picks out in real time to decide where I go on the crease, what save selection I use, was mind-blowing. We have a new one of those with goalies around the league every single week. So if you're a goalie and you watch that, you're going to get better. So check that out. Like I said, if you're not a goalie, don't bother. If you are, ingoalmag.com, we've got something to make you better.
Love it, Kevin. As always, blast talking to you. If you enjoyed listening to us, please go hit the 5-star review button for the PDO cast wherever you listen to the show. And we're going to be back tomorrow with more. We're going to do the weekly mailbag since it's a Friday. So thank you for listening to the Hockey PDO cast here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.